And back to Silent Witness. The forensic chaps are, of course, very impressive with organs and bodily fluids, but not quite as deft with bits of earth. And as we all know, the answer lies in the soil. Lorna Dawson is at the James Hutton Institute in Aberdeen.
Every patch of soil will have its own unique composition. Bacteria, fungi, archaea, all these things are living in your soil, and they also have their own DNA signature. So if you think of all that complexity, that's very useful because that gives lots and lots of information.
Hasn't that information been used for years by forensic investigators?
That information has been used for years by research scientists, but it's not been used for years for evidence in court.
Give me some examples of any cases you've been on.
Well, a case that recently came to court, which was in North Wales, it was a case where there was an unfortunate girl found in a ditch. They didn't have evidence to associate anyone to that location, but there was a dirty shoe and a dirty pair of tracksuit bottoms some distance from that crime scene. So we took the soil and we looked at it, and there wasn't an unusual amount of soil on the inside of the trousers. There was also an unusual amount of soil on the actual shoe that was found. So the question that they posed the police, could that material on those objects have come from the place that they found, or could they have come from somewhere else, say perhaps along the area of the ditch? So we looked at the characteristics in the soil from those two items. We used what is called stable isotope analysis. As you move from one location to another, that isotopic signature shifts. And the isotopic signature that was in the soil on the tracksuit bottoms was the same as the isotopic signature at the crime scene, and it was completely different from where the trousers were actually deposited. So that linked the trousers, as did the elemental composition of the soil. And on the shoe itself, there was a tiny fragment of plastic. Now, that's the importance of investigation, taking time to look at the sample. And we found this tiny unusual bit of plastic on the shoe, and a similar bit of plastic was found at the body deposition site. So that was very powerful to link that particular item of footwear to that crime scene. And together that all built up a case against the chap who was actually found guilty.
I suppose you can also get soil on the inside. If someone knocks over a flower pot or something like that, you can be useful.
Yes, absolutely. And that peat in itself can have its own signature. Every compost that you look at in a garden centre will have a signature derived from that original peat bog that the peat came from. Although, of course, we should be moving towards peat-free compost because it's much more environmentally friendly to use that. But those have their own unique signatures too, which can be very powerful in discriminating sources of organic compost.
Now, I suppose in court, people can understand, the juries can understand what a fingerprint is and whether you've actually found it with accuracy. They're even pretty good these days on understanding the statistics to do with DNA and whether you actually got a sure match. But what about soil? What can you tell a jury and what can't you?
You can tell a jury where something could definitely not have come from, because we've now got very, very powerful databases. We have got a soil cover and geological information pretty much for the whole of the landmass of the UK. And that is very powerful to link back to know which areas a particular soil could definitely not have come from. So it's excluding areas, but it also narrows down to areas that it could have come from. So say you get the minerals being the same, then you get the organic fraction being the same, then you get the microbiology being the same. If you add up all those things together, and particularly if some of these can be quite unusual, then it is indeed very powerful evidence.
But what can't you tell the jury? You can't give them statistics or graphs or things like that.
You can't say it's categorical evidence. It's not a match, not like DNA, because soils are continuous. They go across a landscape. There's no one point that is matched to another point. That can be very useful because you could take one area and say that's different from another area 2 centimetres away, but there could be another place where it's the same across a metre. So it's the spatial scale of that variability that can be very important as well to understand.
Of course, members of the public, especially in Australia, get most of their forensic information from the telly and programmes like Silent Witness. Have you had anything to do with them?
I helped with the BBC on a couple of episodes of Silent Witness, and that was really good fun. And it's really nice to see that media are using experts such as myself to make sure that what they present to the general public is as near to the truth as it can be. Obviously, we can't analyse a sample in 10 minutes and come up with the right answer, but they've got to condense it for the sake of television. Yeah.
Did you meet Nicky and Harry and tell them how to get their little grains of sand or whatever it was off the shoe?
Yeah, they did a fantastic job in actually going out and sampling in the field too. Getting the pathologist out to do some field sampling was quite a feat.
And what about writers?
Yes, I've worked with writers, Val McDermott for one, Anne Cleves, Stuart McBride in a Scottish context, to make sure that they get their facts right.
Of course, you're a network that's newly established, and it includes Australia too, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. One of our founder members, Professor Rob Fitzpatrick, he heads up the Centre for Forensic Science in Adelaide. This international network, its International Union of Geological Sciences, has set up this initiative on forensic geology, and he is our Australian champion. And what we've got is we've got members in most of the nations across the world, so that we're trying to develop an international protocol such that we can help the practitioners in each nation have at their fingertips the availability of the different techniques that we have here in the UK.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Intracranial bleeding.
Caused how?
It's subdural. She may have been thrown or fell against something hard.
Before she went in the river?
I think so. It's possible that the cold of the water stopped her heart as she went in. It's known as dry drowning. That would explain why we found so little water in the lungs.
We'll search along the river path and see if we can find any traces of an attack.
There are no other injuries to suggest a struggle.
What about the barcode?
Silent Witness, returning next year to ABC One, I'm told. And I was talking to Lorna Dawson from the James Hutton Institute in Aberdeen, who's part of the Global Geological Network, bringing soil science to the forensic teams.